Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be talking about the NFL and all the exciting news happening left and right. We'll be having our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will talk about the WNBA Finals. We'll talk about the baseball tour in the conference series. And we will have, of course, our two-minute drill for college football. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast. Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow and turn on your post notifications for at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports, that's our social media handle. We are on all social media, so definitely tune in for that. But as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome receivers to new places. We've got all kind of stuff happening in the world of sports. We're going to talk about the NFL Week 6. We're going to talk about NFL Week 7 coming up. We're going to have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We're going to have our WNBA final discussion. We're going to have the ALS and the NLCS, ALCS and the NLCS discussing this show. And, of course, we're going to end best for last, our college football two-minute drill. Now, if I sound like I have a lot of energy, this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson. For those of you who may have skipped the intro, hope you didn't. My boy B-Roy with the intro song. Check out his music. He's dropping fairly regularly every night. He's on a hot streak, dropping banger after banger. So check him out. Again, it's my boy B-Roy out of the Northeast. He's dropping banger after banger. He did the intro song. So if you like what you hear, the style and the flow, he's got much hotter stuff. Can kind of jip me a little bit, but he's got much hotter stuff on his new music. He's dropping, like I said, hit after hit, getting better and better. And again, it's your owner and host, Justin Jackson. Like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, the audio show, and the YouTube show. Of course, the YouTube show from last week dropped yesterday. And then the audio show, you'll hear this. This is an insta-release show. So right as I record, it's going to come out to you guys. I'm going to put the link to the YouTube show in the description of this show. So that way you can subscribe to the YouTube channel along with being in the audio show drops. So wherever you get your podcast, just subscribe, download, tell your friends. And of course, again, your biggest help to the show is simply your subscriptions. So definitely appreciate that. And of course, follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. Shout out Jordan Schultz for the follow. NFL Insider Jordan Schultz followed the Twitter yesterday. A couple of days ago, so shout out him for the follow. We definitely followed him back. We appreciate when any of the big guys in the space show us some attention. We definitely appreciate that. But housekeeping out of the way, got all that out of the way. I'm looking at my rundown, right? And then I'm looking at it. The show is produced by IMS Productions. We came up with a rundown. The rundown's in my face, and I'm throwing it out of the window. I don't know where this show is going to take us. I really don't. But I was going to, NFL Week 6, NFL Week 7, we usually do the previous week, the current week, kind of get Jack's Pack going for the NFL. And if it's about 35 minutes of the show, we are throwing that completely out of the window. We have to start with trades. receiver trades. I don't know what happened. I don't know what got in the water, but receivers started getting moved. So our first move, a move we've been watching for a couple of weeks, a move that we've been looking at for a couple of weeks now, ever since it was the end of the possibility, and that was Devontae Adams teaming back up with Aaron Rodgers. That is now official. So a couple of weeks ago, the Las Vegas Raiders, or Devontae Adams, formally requested a trade from the Las Vegas Raiders. Once this trade was official, we all know Devontae Adams' tendency to want to play with people he knows. Think about it. He went to Green Bay. He loved Aaron Rodgers. The only reason he left Aaron Rodgers was because he felt Green Bay was not paying him the money that he rightfully deserved. And let's be honest, I agree. So then where is his preferred destination? The New Orleans Saints. Oh, the Las Vegas Raiders. Why was the Las Vegas Raiders' preferred destination? Because his college quarterback, Derek Carr, was the quarterback at the Raiders at the time. Derek Carr gets moved. Immediately, people look and go, well, the only reason why Devontae even went to the Raiders was because of, A, they were willing to pay him the money that he was looking for, number one. Number two, Derek Carr was in Vegas. Well, Devontae sticks out a year, and then finally says, okay, I'm out of here. Where's the two locations that immediately pop up as his primary destinations? He said he would play anywhere, quote unquote, but he preferred to play in New York. Where's Aaron Rodgers? In New York and New Orleans, back with Derek Carr. So we knew that his highest chance of landing in a new location was with a player, a quarterback that he knew. Right. And so that was the focus for the trade market from the time it began, was him getting to a quarterback that he knew. Many people said he was going to go back to Aaron because he's been open in the fact that him and Aaron had unfinished business. He wished that him and Aaron had won a Super Bowl together. There was a lot of things he felt he wanted to do with Aaron that he didn't have a chance to do. I remember he was on Club Shay Shay and Shannon asked him pretty much, if you have a chance to get back to Aaron, would you take it? And he kind of danced around. He said he's in the ultimate of saying yes. We kind of danced around his way of saying yes, because smartly he knows that, and Shannon knows too. If Devontae Adams would have said, yeah, first chance I get, I'm going back to Aaron, that sours you in the organization, it sours you in the fan base, and you can't have that look. So he danced around it. It ended up in a yes, but he danced around kind of how it would happen sort of thing. And so now you get, like I said, fast forward, you get to the trade requests. We look at those two things. I truly believe he's a New Orleans Saint if the Saints could have had the money. So Mickey Loomis is a cap wizard. But the problem with the way he maneuvers his money is at some point you got to pay the piper. It's like he uses the Saints on an eternal credit card. And he just keeps paying enough for the bill to charge over the max again. And so that's kind of where he was at. He finally had to pay the bill. He looked around. There was not much maneuvering left. Okay, I'm going to pay the bill this year, and then we'll kind of get back to what we do. Especially if you got a guy like Alvin Kamara needing his money. Oh, Cam Jordan has to get taken care of. You know, you have talent that has to get taken care of, and Derek Carr is a pretty expensive player. And so it comes down to, you know, at a certain point, there's no more wiggle room. Right, and that's what people look at with the Cowboys. Like, Jerry Jones said he couldn't afford Derrick Henry. People go, I'm looking at the money. I'm looking at the money. But then you got to remember, Micah Parsons hadn't gotten paid yet. CeeDee Lamb hadn't gotten paid yet. You look at a lot of these guys that need their money that are key players, and you realize, no, Jerry's not lying. He literally can't afford Derrick Henry's contract because it would eat into the pie of one of his current All-Pros. Okay. So I think he's a New Orleans Saint if the Saints have the money. However, the Jets do have the money. The Jets have Aaron Rodgers, and the Jets had another thing that the Saints don't have truly at this moment: desperation. The Jets are desperate. The Jets have been scrambling since they, since the start of this season, trying to figure it out. And whenever the Packers won, I think it was a second game, they went 2-1, and Aaron Rodgers came out talking about he expects to dominate. That's what the expectation should be in the locker room, to dominate opponents and this, that, and the third, right? It's been about 3 weeks. The Jets have proceeded to lose 3 straight games. They've also fired their head coach, and last night they looked putrid. Now, they should have won. They should have beaten the Bills, which I think it says a lot to be about the Bills, but it was New York, but Buffalo's right there. There's a lot of Bills fans made the trip. Buffalo, New York, East Weatherford, New Jersey, ain't that far apart. So a lot of Bills fans made the trip. However, they should have lost last night to the Jets. The Jets should have won that game. They had some kicking woes. But typical Jets, they find a way to lose it. They find a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And they lose that game. So when you're coming out and you're just looking at the Jets situation. Now, according to reports, the deal for Davante Adams was effectively in its final stages last night. So before the game, the deal was almost done. After the game, it ramped up. The deal was agreed to. Davante Adams flies out of Vegas that night. It flies out of Vegas early this morning. Because when the trade was announced, Davante Adams had been in the building 15 minutes. Taking his physical and stuff. Like, he jumped on the Pat McAfee show with Aaron. Smiling ear to ear. And I'm saying this with all of, I mean, the trade breaks at about 10-ish. It might not even been that early. Like, it breaks about 9:30-ish. Aaron's on the Pat McAfee show 2 hours later with Aaron. I mean, Aaron's on the Pat McAfee show doing his weekly spot with Davante Adams in the back. I mean, he was already in New York. Like, it wasn't like he patched in Zoom. He was in Aaron's camera. Aaron was smiling. Davante was smiling ear to ear. Because now Aaron's looking like it's Weapon City. Because now on one side, Davante Adams. On the other side is Garrett Wilson. You still got Breece Hall running the ball. Alan Lazard's in your slot. Like, this is a lot of weaponry in New York right now. They are clearly the team that's going for it. Unlike the Giants. We'll talk about them later. Actually, no, we won't. The Giants suck. But all in all, man, the Jets are going for it. My thoughts on this trade, man, really quickly. I don't see it. I don't see the benefit. It doesn't help you. Your problem is you have a 40-year-old quarterback who's rigid. You have no organizational structure. And you got nobody to block for said 40-year-old quarterback who's rigid. I love Davante Adams. He doesn't solve your organizational structure problem. He doesn't solve your left tackle problem. And he doesn't solve Aaron Rodgers' non-fluidity or his stubbornness and rigidity. It doesn't help any of those things. Like, I think they're going to be more explosive on offense. I think that if you don't have two good corners, now you're in trouble playing them because Davante eats up one-on-one coverage by himself and Gary Wilson's a top 40 receiver in the league. So you've got a top 20 in the top. You got two top 40 guys. You know, it's going to be hard if you don't have two good receivers to even contend with them just because of what they're putting on the field. So congratulations to the New York Jets. Proud of them. Like I said, they made a move. They made a move. But they were the first team to make a move in the AFC East as when the clock struck, I mean, maybe 12 o'clock, the Bills strike, and they land Amari Cooper from the Buffalo Bills. So Davante Adams goes to the Jets for a conditional third that can become a second. Probably looking at the requirements to become a second, it's going to be a third. Adams either has to be first or second team AP All-Pro, or he has to be on the active roster when they make an AFC Championship game or a Super Bowl. Because neither of those things are happening, he's going to be a third-round pick. Amari Cooper goes from the Cleveland Browns to the Buffalo Bills, and the deal ends up being Cooper and a sixth for a third and a seventh. This is clearly a move for the Cleveland Browns to, for lack of a better term, begin to solve the problem in Cleveland. Now, when Amari Cooper was originally traded to the Cleveland Browns, it was for a fifth. So they got 2-3 years of production out of him and upgraded the pick that was traded for him. Also, Amari Cooper's salary this year going into the year was created a lot into signing bonus. That made it very easy to trade. It was one of those, I speak all the time about the NBA tradable contracts or contracts meant to be traded. You can look at like when Josh Hart signed with, I think it was Portland. I want to say Portland. He signs with Portland for like 4 years, $48 million. $12 million a year is the most tradable contract in the NBA. I don't know why. I guess I don't understand the cap machinations enough to discover why, but I know like $12 million gets you into that middle level that is higher than the mid level. So it gets you a little bit above those mid level guys. So a mid level guy plus it's effectively a multi year mid level contract. Think about the mid level deal, it's about $12.6 million. So it's multi year mid level contract. whenever the Browns converted most of Amari Cooper, I mean like 90% of Amari Cooper's base into signing bonus, it was a contract meant to be traded. It was designed from its creation to be traded. And that's ultimately what happened. So kudos to the Bills for taking a swing. Now, this is a team that they noticed the loss of Stephon Diggs hurt. It wasn't crippling. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, Josh Allen's now the worst quarterback in the league because he didn't have Stephon Diggs. No. However, Josh Allen did have to make a lot more off script. He'd have to make a lot more off platform plays to receivers neither you nor I have heard of for this season. And that was because you did not have that number one receiver that you knew if I take seven steps, plant my back foot and fire the ball across the middle on a dig route, Stephon Diggs is going to be there. It was a lot more on script when Stephon Diggs was the Bill. However, now you're getting Amari Cooper, who's effectively a bigger Stephon Diggs. The route runner, great hands. He's going to feast in Buffalo because of that ability. Like I said, route running, great hands. And Josh Allen's looking for that kind of receiver to get the ball to make sure that he is emphasizing the fact that we're going to have to be on time. He's going to be a number one receiver. We're going to have to take coverage away from a Shakir, a Keon Coleman, someone of that nature in order to execute the game plan well. And Amari Cooper's going to have to be incredibly valuable in one-on-one situations. He's going to have to win those battles more time than not. But again, the AFC East strikes in both deals. Devontae Adams goes from the Las Vegas Raiders, where he loved the warm weather, to East Weatherford, New Jersey and the New York Jets. And Amari Cooper, who seemingly can't escape the cold, goes from the Cleveland Browns to the Buffalo Bills. Huge, huge acquisitions. Neither one. I think Cooper to the Bills is going to weigh more than Adams to the Jets, because the Bills really don't have, besides a true number one receiver, really any weaknesses on the offense. And quite the opposite for the Jets. They have an offensive line problem, a play caller problem, a structural organizational problem, a 40-year-old quarterback problem. They have a lot of problems, none of which resolve themselves with the acquisition of a rental at receiver. Not a single one of them resolve themselves. But hey, by all means, Jets, keep jetting. All right, so let's get into NFL Week 6 really quickly. Let's dive right into that. It was going to lead the show, but Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper, the Bills, the Raiders, and everybody else involved decided not going to happen. So we're going to dive right into that. We touched on the Monday Night Football game, so we're going to skip past that. All right, so let's talk about it. Look, I need you guys to go watch the YouTube show, and I talked about it last week, too, about how I feel about Zach Taylor. You barely beat the Giants 17-7. Look. The Cincinnati Bengals, and I was trying to figure out what team was going to allow Bill Belichick to break Don Shula's record. Because I ultimately believe Don Shula's record will fall to Bill Belichick. I do, and I truly believe that. And I was trying to figure out what team could he go to that it wouldn't take a lot of a rebuild. It wouldn't take a lot of a retool. He wouldn't have to spend four or five years trying to, you know, get it together. And because he didn't have that kind of football time enough. He needs somewhere that he can go and be there within, you know, the record's 2 good years away. I think he's at like 15 or 16 left. So 2 years, we can go somewhere and win 2 years. And then if the team is good, he can keep going. If not, he got the record. I'm out. I'll leave. In this situation, I think it's the Bengals. I think the Bengals is where he lands. I think the Bengals is where Bill Belichick should go. I think he should go there, run the defense, hire a smart, young offensive coordinator. Basically, an heir apparent. It sounds insane, but an heir apparent. I'd hire, like I said, Clint Kubiak, but Clint Kubiak is already offensive coordinator. I'd hire like the quarterback coach for the Rams, or somebody in his tree that he trusts. Knowing him, he'll try and get Josh McDaniels. But I'd hire somebody if I'm Bill Belichick. I go to the Bengals. The offense, fix the offense. You're going to run the defense and go win that division. I mean, like, because Zach Taylor sucks. Or if I'm Brian Flores, that's the job I go. I try to get the Bengals job. I'm going to have the offense. I'm going to have the defense on lock from Brian Flores. Get a guy who can run the offense and play football. From Clint Kubiak, I want that job. I want the Bengals job as the head man. I run the offense and then hire Robert Saleh on my defense. Like, that's such a great opportunity there on so many levels in Cincinnati. Zach Taylor is wet in the bed, and he shouldn't have that job anymore, plain and simple. Speaking of the New Orleans Saints, what a weird way to get blown out. They got blown out very strangely. They went down 17-0. It was Spencer Rattler's first start. Tampa Bay's coming in kind of hot. They go down 17-0. Then they proceed to rip off like 20 or 24 straight points. And then proceed to get blown out 51-27. It was a very weird way to get blown out. You started getting blown out. You came back. It looked like you might run the table on them. And then you end up getting blown out anyway. Very strange way to get the doors blown off you at home against a division opponent in Mike Evans, Marshawn Lattimore hate week. Just an incredibly strange way to get blown out. Issues are happening in New Orleans. That was a game where the defense gave up 51 points despite catching three interceptions. That's kind of hard to do. But, you know, it's just something's going on in New Orleans. I think the team is losing faith in Dennis Allen. Whatever faith was left after last season, I think it's all but gone. I think the team has joined the fans in saying get him up out of there immediately. But it was not the worst loss of the weekend. The Dallas Cowboys, on Jerry Jones' birthday, suffered the worst loss in the history of the Jones era, potentially a Cowboys history, at home to the Detroit Lions 47-6. In Jerry World, how utterly embarrassing. That's the kind of thing that, as a Patriots fan, make your life a little better. You're like, we lost, sure. But we didn't lose like that. And our quarterback's not making $240 million. I mean, absolutely bashed. I mean, kicked in the face is what happened to the Dallas Cowboys. It was utterly embarrassing. Downright deplorable. Should have been a crime against an old man on his birthday. That was bad. Really, really bad, actually. It was so bad that at one point the Lions are running trick plays, multiple trick plays, to an offensive lineman. Two multiple offensive linemen. They had Connor Decker, a receiver, running routes. They had Panay Sewell catching design hook and ladders. I mean, it was embarrassing. They played in the face of the Dallas Cowboys organization. That's the kind of loss as a coach you can't come back from. If you blow me out, that's one thing. If you beat me 40-10, 40-17, you just kicked our butt that day. That can't happen more than once a season, but it's okay. When the Lions feel the comfortability and the jovialness and the laughter to run multiple trick plays to offensive linemen in my building, that's the kind of loss where there's two armed security guards waiting outside of your office with your stuff in a box saying, you no longer work here. Your pink slip's in the box. Like, that can't happen. And so the fact that he still has his job this morning says a lot about Jerry Jones. Now, Mike McCarthy is on the last year of his deal. I think if Dan Quinn is still in the Cowboys, that loss doesn't happen for one. Number two, I think Mike McCarthy's already fired and Dan Quinn's leading this team with a fresh new contract and no interim tag. And I think that is the case. But because Dan Quinn's not on the team, Kellen Moore's not on the team, I think the two guys Jerry might have had in his head, his heir apparent, no longer work for the Cowboys. And so that is something where you're going to have to just suck it up effectively if you are Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. And then a little bit of quick hitters. The NFC North becomes the first division to ever have four teams this early in the season with 4+ wins. So congratulations to them. The battle of Jaden Daniels versus Lamar Jackson was truly a showdown. Jaden Daniels goes 24-35 for 269 and two touchdowns. Lamar Jackson goes 20-26, 223. For one touchdown and one pick. I think Jaden Daniels outplayed him. Lamar Jackson has Derrick Henry behind him. I mean, just truly, I think if you give Jaden Daniels, I don't know, Derrick freaking Henry, that's a different ball game. And I think the Commanders run away and high with it. I think the Commanders are the better team. I just think that, you know, Lamar Jackson had Derrick Henry. And then Nick Sirianni got in this weird spat with the fans. He later apologized. When the game was not going not so great, the fans busted out a fire Sirianni chant. Then after the win, not even was feeling, well, after the win was in hand, Sirianni began jawing back and forth with the Philly fans, which actually may have endeared him to Philly fans. We're talking about the same city that booed Santa Claus and the same city that cheered when Michael Irvin was laying on the field with a broken back. Like, that may have endured him to Philly fans, jawing back and forth, but very, very unbecoming of a coach. He did later apologize. Oh, and also it's time for Doug Peterson, old Dougie P, to please be removed from the city of Jacksonville as the head coach. It just doesn't work. There's weaponry everywhere. You're an offensive head coach, and your offense is an abject disaster, downright deplorable. Your offensive coaching and game management makes Zach Taylor look like Don Shula and Bill Belichick. You should no longer be employed in the NFL as the NFL head coach. You should never be employed in the NFL as the NFL head coach again because you suck. All right, so we're going to move on to NFL Week 7 right after this quick break. Welcome into the show. So far, probably in the last 24 to 36 hours, this is the longest that I've had not breaking a news story. So it's been all kind of stuff all over the place. Like, Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper today. Jates, Justin Town Sports, social media is blowing up more yesterday than it has in a very, very long time. And that is pretty, pretty impressive considering that, you know, sometimes ATS, the stories are so short on IG, it looks like you can't even see the difference between the two stories. It was pretty small yesterday. It was stuff breaking all over the place. But excitedly for that. Our big news entering this week, entering week 7, is the Haason Reddick stuff. Think about how much stuff happened to knock Haason Reddick into, like, the B block. But Haason Reddick, CAA parted ways with embattled, beleaguered, and downright confused at this point. Defensive end Haason Reddick of the New York Jets. CAA said, you know what, we've tried to get you back in. We've had a deal we thought was fair. You told us no, you dug in your heels. That's fine, you do it. And so he fired them quick, or they fired him. Quickly, he hires Drew Rosenhaus and Rosenhaus's representatives. And within 24 to 48 hours, they were allowed to seek a trade. Haason Reddick is dug in on the fact that he wants a multi-year deal. Now, I think the deal that CAA may have had in place was a big one-year deal. But Haason Reddick, basically trying to avoid franchise tag or something similar, probably was like, look, I'm not trying to play like that. I want a multi-year contract, and it's understandable for security purposes. He's never had his big payday, but he's probably looking at the fact that he wants a multi-year deal. The Jets at the time weren't offering it, so he figures, you know, screw y'all. I'm going to just hold out till I get it. I mean, he's racked up over $9 million in fines. This is one of the most unfruitful holdouts I've ever seen in my life because I don't think he's going to get his multi-year contract, and he can't get the $9 million back. So this is just I don't get it. Like, it's one of the most unfruitful holdouts of all time. I don't see the end goal. I don't see how he gets a way to the end goal. Now, could a guy like Drew Rosenhaus convince him, hey, take this one-year deal. It's going to be prorated for $11 million. You owe $9 million. So you're going to play for two. It has a clause in it that extends. Like, blah, blah, blah. Could he make this crazy off-the-wall deal? We're on the Jets' books. It looks like one thing. But to Haason Reddick's pockets, look like something else. And get him on the team, get him ready to go. I don't know. It's possible. If anybody can do it, it's Drew Rosenhaus. But absolute disaster of a holdout. I don't understand. But anyway, they have given Rosenhaus and Reddick the ability to seek a trade. Now, there's multiple different reports. Some reports are saying it's for a limited time. Some reports are saying that it's just a pure, just, hey, if you go find something, go find something. You know, absolutely, you know, just figure, if you can find something that finds what you need, then please, please take it, and we'll take back corn chips and a sack of potatoes if we can to get him under this problem. If you're the Jets, this has been unfruitful. You traded for him. I assume you had some form of a deal in place. It didn't come together, whatever that deal was going to be, and it's just been a crap show ever since. I'm not going to go back through all the Hassan Reddick saga. It's been a mess all summer. It was a mess the past year with Philly. He was trying to negotiate with the Eagles, and it just didn't come together. It's like it ended up on the Jets, and it didn't come together. So I don't know what his personal asking price is, but two organizations both said pretty much no. We're not, you're like, we're not even close kind of thing. At least in negotiations, if it's close, if one person wants, you know, let's say average annual value of 20, and the other side wants an average annual value of 16, it's report that two sides are, you know, coming together in agreement. Two sides are trying to get it together. They are a little bit apart. There's been no real reporting on the negotiations at all. So I don't know what Hassan Reddick's asking for, where he is dug in at, but neither organization he has been tied to this calendar year has obviously got anywhere near it. So I don't know what's going on, but hey, if anybody can figure it out, it's Drew Rosenhaus. He's one of, if not the best in the game. So we'll see what happens there. But let's get into NFL Week 7. We're going to talk about a few games. Some we're going to pick, some we're not, because the ones we're not going to pick is in Jack's pack. But the Patriots play the Jags in London. We're not going to pick a winner because it's in our Jack's pack. However, this is a game where I think the Jags have a advantage because they've already been in London. They've been to London for, they flew in London. They played the game Sunday morning. So they probably flew in London probably Thursday, and they're going to stay the whole time. They're going to stay all week. They're going to get used to the time, used to their, they're going to be in the hotel. They're going to be adjusted. They're going to have a practice week on London time instead of half practice in America, half practice in London. They're going to have practice in London on London time for 6 weeks. For they're going to have 4 or 5 practices in London. They're going to be used to it. They're going to adjust, and they're going to have more of a home crowd. And their stadium's going to look like the Jags. So when they played the Bears, I thought it was going to neutral site it. Like it used to, committed the international series, basically like a lost home game. But no, it was Bears. It was like Bear logo, Bear in the end zone, Bears on the outside with the Bears jerseys in the crowd. I don't know how they did it, but it was very Bear-centric. This week, I expect it to be very Jaguar-centric. So it's going to be more comfortable confines for them. This is also something where the Jaguars, like I said, will have the advantage of being in London for a week and kind of having that lack of jet lag. Because if they were jet lagged on Sunday, they won't be by the time next Sunday hits. So very interesting there. For Drake May, this is his first international game. I don't recall North Carolina playing international while he was under center, and high schools usually don't. So this is his first time playing football under center in an international setting. It's something very normal for the Jaguars. Like I said, this is his second international game this year. This is Drake May's first international game of his career. The new organization structure, this is their first international game. This is Jerod Mayo's first one as a head coach. This is everybody in the organization's first time in the international series, not in the Belichickian era. So it's going to be very interesting to see even how small stuff is handled, such as practice times or food times or whatever, because again, this is the first time where it's not under the Belichickian era. But again, won't pick it. Send Jack's pack. Again, we will pick Texans at Packers. I'm just going to get the pick out of the way. Give me the pack. Look, this is a game where I think physicality is going to win out. I think the Packers are a little bit more physical right now. The Texans showed some signs that they could be beaten pretty well in New England. It was moment, you know, Keyshawn Boutte blows past Derek Stingley. You got Drake May slicing and dicing the defense. They keep going for 3 touchdown passes. Pop Douglas gets his first touchdown. It's the most successful that the Patriots have looked all season. But schematically, it's probably the most vanilla Houston will look. And, or not vanilla, but game plan non-centric that Houston will look. Due to the fact the Patriots were starting a rookie quarterback. Nobody knew what the play calls are going to be. Nobody knew what the play sheet was, what tendencies were going to be there. They were starting a rookie. So you wanted to do, you know, you kind of want to just do your thing if you're Houston and kind of adjust to the rookie once you get some sort of data on him and what he wants to do, his tendencies and stuff of that nature. But I've got the Packers here. I think that's just the run game, and Jordan Love's going to be a little too good. The Texans are a little beat up right now, especially with a guy like Nico Collins out. So Jair Alexander can go to Stephon Diggs. I just think that puts a lot of pressure on the rest of those guys to make plays. So I've got the Packers in that one. Bengals at Browns. Won't pick it because it's in Jack's pack, but this is an important game in the AFC North. I do think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to begin to fall down. The Baltimore Ravens, as you can see, they've had opportunities to fall 2 weeks in a row. They've stood up on both occasions. So I think they're going to end up being, they're going to start taking off at this point. So in order for you to really contend for that second playoff spot, which is probably, I said the AFC North was going to end up with probably 2 or 3 teams in. Definitely going to end up with 2. So second place in this division is going to be important. And I think you're going to have to start, we're going to have to win if you're Bengals and Browns, these kind of games. I do think the Steelers will start coming back down to earth sooner rather than later. They're winning games. I'm not even sure how at certain points, but they are winning games. Like I said, I think they'll come back down to earth sooner rather than later. And ultimately, this Bengals-Browns game will be vital to the second place in the division. And I think that second place team will end up with a playoff spot. Lions at Vikings. A game that I can pick because it is not in Jack's pack. I've got the Vikings here. I think he gave Brian Flores 2 weeks. And I think that the Lions kind of did all kind of nonsense against the Cowboys because you want a guy like Brian Flores to have to prep for as much as possible, especially in a bye week. Because I'm sure Brian Flores went back and was using egg tape on the against the Cowboys. And, you know what I'm saying, stalking it for anything he could find. Then it became Trick Play City. So that part's probably used to him. Although now he has to prep a defense for what do they line up in this? What do they line up in that? What if y'all get this look? And so that's just something else he has to prepare for. But I think the Vikings are also going to get this win. I don't think the Vikings offense will be all that great, but I do think that Brian Flores will limit the Lions enough to where Darnold makes a couple of big throws and they win an ugly one, 24-20. But the Vikings, I think, need this win because you got to keep your confidence and your momentum going. Now, do I need them to do they need to go 17-0 for confidence? No. However, winning games off a bye is huge for confidence because you've had 2 practice weeks. So that's huge for confidence. Winning game off the bye, and I think the Vikings get it done. And then ultimately in Monday night week seven, we end with a double Monday night football game. The Ravens at the Bucks. That should be an interesting one for sure. And that one, I definitely will pick the Ravens. And then Chargers at Arizona. Give me the Chargers here. I think they're just going to be too much for the Cardinals. The Cardinals, whatever momentum they were riding against San Fran has fallen off, and they can't seem to get it back. But that is my pick for those two. But up next, we're going to talk about our highly successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show. Welcome back into the show. Now we're going to jump into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. This is the weeks that hurt. You know. And these are the weeks that are like, man, I was a half a point from 5-0. I was literally 0.5 away from 5-0. Texas minus 6.5 hit. Falcons minus 6 hits. Bengals minus 3.5 hits. Bills minus 2.5 hits. I had Commanders plus 6.5. They lose by 7. That hurts. That hurts a lot. Because, again, I am literally a half a point away from 5-0. All right, so a little bit of breaking news into the show. The NFL owners have unanimously approved the agreement between the Jaguars and the city of Jacksonville for a $1.4 billion renovation of the current stadium. The construction will begin after 2025, and the stadium will be complete in 2028. So that's where, like, it's been some months now, but we spoke about how, and I definitely tweeted on about how the Jaguars are going to be playing football in like different locations for a while. And there was one point it was like, oh yeah, it's kind of perfect the Jaguars are doing this because, you know, no other team pretty much is no other team is as transient with their team as the Jaguars. So the Jags are probably going to play a lot of international games. They're probably going to play, and they're supposed to play UCF a little bit. Like, they're going to be moving, basically, around in different locations. So, if it's going to happen to anybody, probably the team that is most okay with it is the Jacksonville Jaguars, just because of how they already operate. You know, they were called England's team at one point. There was a time where people considered if there was going to be a team in England, it was going to be the Jaguars. So them being displaced for a little while is not abnormal for them and their fan base. It's kind of weird. Kind of weird that we have in the NFL a transient team where it's like, yeah, this team is known for moving and relocating, but that's where the Jaguars are in their timeline. But anyway, so they're gonna have effectively a brand new stadium in 2028. But anyway, let's get back to this Jags pack. So again, we were a half point away. We had the Commanders plus six and a half. They lose by 7. Again, that's the ones that hurt. Those are the ones you're like, man, if we just get it a little bit better, we get a number a little bit higher, we win the bet. But it is what it is. We're having a great season. That brings us to 18-11-1, which is 60% overall. And as you guys remember, the professional betting number that you want to be a part of is 57% is the magic number in the business. So if you get to 57%, you are what is considered a professional gambling level, in which case you will always make a profit. And not only make a profit, you will always be able to live off your gambling, depending on what you're gambling. But depending on the amount of units that you're gambling and the price of the bets that you're making, but you will always be able to make a profit and to live off of that. But anyway, let's get into this week's game. So we are diving right in, and remember, we are discussing a couple of games we talked about already in our earlier segment. I was like, I can't discuss it because, you know, they were my Jacks pack. When I started off with one of those games, Patriots plus 5.5 versus the Jaguars, take the Pats here. If you can get this number at plus money, take it. I think the Pats ultimately lose this game, but I don't think the spread comes down far enough for them to be under a field goal. Now, if it ends up being plus 2.5, plus 3, plus 3.5, I think I would stay away from that. But you keep it at a plus 4.5, plus 5. I have it here, plus 5.5. I would hammer that. I think this game ends up being a 4-point Jags win. I think ultimately the Jags want to win this game more than the Patriots do if you catch them adrift. And I just think it ends up being a 4-point Jags win, 24-20. 27-23, one of those kind of games. But definitely hammer it, Patriots plus 5.5 on that number. Our second game is the Bengals minus 4.5 at Cleveland. Take the Bengals here. Look, there's something critically wrong in Cleveland. Many people would say it's comeuppance for the Deshaun Watson transaction. I don't know. I just know there's something critically wrong in the Cleveland Browns organization. You just traded Amari Cooper, so whatever weaponry you had has become greatly reduced. And now you get a Bengals team that needs this win. Because we laid it out earlier, what they're facing, what the organization's facing, what they could potentially be getting themselves into by winning this game. They still have a shot at the second playoff seed. I think it's going to come out of the AFC North. Because of which, they have to win this game. You traded Amari Cooper back and didn't put anybody in his locker. You traded Amari Cooper away and didn't put anybody in his place. I think the Browns are going to look bad here. I think the Bengals are going to win by a couple of touchdowns. Hammer the minus 4.5 for the Bengals. Bills, minus 8.5 at Titans. Amari Cooper's going to play this week. Not maybe in a package, but he's going to play this week. Bills, minus 8.5. Hammer the minus 8.5. Even if Amari Cooper doesn't play, they give him a week to get his act together. It's the Titans. It's Will Levis. You just had a much better offense down to 20. I think you can hold the Titans probably to 13. I think the Bills are going to score north of 24 to 30 points. It's going to be a blowout for the Bills. Bills, minus 8.5. Take the Bills. Commanders, minus 7.5 versus the Panthers. Take the Commanders here. It's a home game. Okay, it's a game where if you're the Commanders, you're looking at what you just did with the Ravens, and you're like, hey, you know, that's gonna be a situation where, if we can do that with the Ravens, we can do that with anybody, and so that is something that if I'm the Commanders, I'm very excited and I'm looking forward to, like I said, being back at home. And hosting a Panthers team that is downright awful. The line is still 7.5. I just looked. So you have an opportunity there to get that at 7.5. The Commanders are going to win by multiple touchdowns over the Panthers. So take the number, hammer it, and roll with that number. And then lastly, the Philadelphia Eagles, minus 3.5 at the Giants. Take the Eagles. The Giants probably got the best defensive performance they're going to get all season, or one of the best defensive performances they're going to get all season, and yet they still find a way to lose by double digits. Philadelphia is not going to allow that to occur. They're going to jump all over the Giants. It's a division game. I don't care. It's in East Weatherford. It's a division game. They're going to jump all over that at the first opportunity to embarrass a division opponent. They're going to take it. So take the Eagles here, minus 3.5. So again, to recap, we have Patriots plus 5.5 over the Jags. Bengals minus 4.5 over the Browns. Bills minus 8.5. I'm sorry. Over the Titans, Commanders minus 7.5 over the Panthers, and Philly minus 3.5 over the Giants. But that is all I have on Jack's Pack. We are now going to shift into the WNBA Finals. Welcome back into the show. And now we're jumping into the WNBA Finals. We're going to talk about that really quickly. The series is tied at 1, headed to Minnesota. Now, if you're a Lynx fan, you're thinking in your head, we could be up 2-0. But also, you could be down 0-2. If you're a Liberty fan, you're thinking we should be up 2-0. We have no business being 1-1 right now. But instead, you're tied 1-1. look at it from the Liberty perspective. So the Liberty side is thinking we should be up 2-0 when they're right. They had an 18-point lead in the NBA. In the finals, game one, it is tied for the largest comeback in the history of the WNBA Finals. The Minnesota Lynx pull out the game, and you still kind of blow it at the end. Stewie gets fouled in the end of regulation, down one, makes the first free throw, missed the second one. If Sabrina Ionescu doesn't foul Courtney Williams on the four-point play, they never even get to the point where they're ever leading. And so who knows how that happens. Stewie still gets fouled. That one free throw wins the game. Then at the end of the overtime period, Stewie misses a layup. Then her ability, she should make that layup pretty easily. She misses a layup, and you still almost win the game. And so then in game two, you pretty much own wire to wire. There was a couple of runs from Minnesota, but you pretty much own wire to wire. If you're Minnesota, you know what I'm saying? If you're Minnesota, you're thinking, okay, we had a hell of a comeback in game one, and we almost pulled it off again in game two, but we did our goal. And the goal of any team, especially a lower seed, is to go steal one of the on the higher seed's home floor. Period. Minnesota's not as high as New York, and I love the WNBA structure because it's really higher seed host throughout the entire playoffs because the playoffs is on conference. They don't have to worry about, oh, conference records, so on and so forth. You're the higher seed because New York's the one seed. So New York knew they had home court advantage the whole way through. At no point, you know, if you're Minnesota, you're like, okay, we weren't planning on winning both. Our goal was to get one. Our dream was to get two and go back to Minnesota just having a split and win the WNBA title. But we got the first one. And we almost got the second one. So we're going to go back to our home building. And, you know, we're going to if you hold home court, we never have to get on a plane again. And we have another parade through downtown Minnesota. Now, this is going to be a very, very important game. I think game three decides who wins the series. And that's typically the case in the NBA. I think in a 1-1 series, the winner of game three wins like 60-something, 70-something% of the games in the NBA. I would love to know what the number is in WNBA, considering they don't have a lot of 1-1. They don't have a lot of best-of-five series. And for the first time in WNBA history, they're going to go to best-of-seven in the finals next year. We're going to truly forget who's the best team in the WNBA. But I would love to find out what the number is. But just looking at basketball history, this is going to be a very important game. Because let's say you win 1-1. Bam, you go up 2-1. New York comes in, handles business, they go up 2-1. They know for a fact game 5 is going to be on that floor. It's going to be in New York. It's going to be in the Barclays. And they're going to have a chance to erase an ugly history of losing in the finals on their floor. If you're Minnesota and you win game three, you have the opportunity to elevate this roster. Cheryl Reeve, Nafisa Collier, Courtney Williams, and the rest of that crew to the level, not quite, but you're right under the Maya Moore, Lindsey Whalen, Sylvia Fowles, Simone Augustus, Rebecca Brunson dynasty. You're the next best thing in Minnesota basketball history, men or women. That Lynx quintet is the greatest thing to happen in Minnesota basketball history. You can come in at a strong second immediately by winning this title, and you know you'll be one game away. Ultimately, truly, I do think that this game will come down to Nafisa versus Breanna Stewart, and there hasn't been that historic battle, right? And you would think that eventually at some point they're going to have to decide it. Best two players on the teams, they guard each other on both ends. At some point, they're going to have to solve it. It's going to be Stewie versus Fisa. At some point, they're going to have to solve it. And I just think it's going to be game three. Because as much as we want, and as much as we hope that it's like, oh, the game seven battle is going to be between these two stars, it never ends up that way. The battle never ends up between the stars because usually the stars are tired. So the battle ends up never between the stars. Usually a role player has a great game or somebody like that. Like, you know, it's a terrible game by everybody. And then somebody hangs on like You know, but it's never the battle. You just line up the best player on either team, go at it, and, you know, the better player wins the series. And it just never happens that way. It's usually an early game in the series. So I'm thinking that that earlier game is going to be the battle between Stewie and Nafisa Collier. It's going to be in game 3 in Minnesota. And I think the winner of that game is going to ultimately win the series. And I think it's going to be Nafisa Collier. I just think she's going to have the advantage of being at home. And I think she's going to have the advantage of just the home crowd. She hasn't had necessarily a great game in terms of offense. She hasn't had a great game just yet in these finals. She's relatively close to breaking the all-time playoff scoring record for a singular playoff run. And I think she's going to have a big night to propel her Minnesota Lynx, and they're going to ultimately win this series and the WNBA title. But by the time you guys hear from me again, the finals will be decided. So we'll be talking about the recap. But this will be, I think, Nafisa Collier's coming out game and the game that propels her Lynx to beat defeating the Liberty in the finals. And if you're the Liberty, you're doing everything you can to get it back to game 5. I don't see a path where the Liberty wins both games in Minnesota. You're doing everything you can to get it back to New York in game 5 where you feel like you have the advantage. But up next, we're going to shift to the NL and the ALCS. Welcome back into the show. Oh, it's a glorious day to be a Yankee. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a Yankee fan. It's a glorious day to be a Yankee. We're not going to start with the ALCS. We're going to start with the NLCS, the Dodgers and the Mets. Oh, this series is panning out as it should have. I want 2 7-game series from the conference series. I'm not going to lie to you. I want 2 7-game series because baseball deserves it. But I think any sport deserves it. I think once you get into the conference finals or the semifinals and then the finals, whatever that is for you, the CS is in baseball, the conference finals in basketball, the Final Four in the Final Four didn't have it, but trying to think of another series, hockey, you know, that has series, the WNBA. I want as many games as possible when you get to this point because I want no doubt in people's minds who the best teams are. I like 7-game series if you're going to do a series-based sport. It is what it is because that way you prove it. Each team had 3 shots at home. Like, you just prove it automatically who's the best team. But regardless, the Mets and the Dodgers, it was blowout in game 1. It was a blowout in game 2. Do I think that trend continues? No. I think this series eventually gets tightened down. I think the Dodgers truly need to win this. This is a series, honestly. And the ALCS has their game 2 tonight, and it'll even back out. But I think this is truly a series where, hey, man, a lot of expensive rosters. Like, the Guardians, probably the least expensive roster, I think, out of the 4 left. The Dodgers, we know what they did with Shohei and Betts and Kershaw and the rest of that crew. We know what the Mets have done. They spent exorbitantly, and the Yankees are finally, you know, playing Yankee baseball again by paying for what they need. The Guardians are fairly not homegrown, but they don't have a ton of expensive players. But in game 1, the Dodgers win 9-0. They come back yesterday, and the Mets win 7-3. And then the Yankees took care of their business 5-2. But I'm saying this is a series, if you're the NLCS, that I think that eventually relieving is going to have to be a part. And I think somebody's going to just man up and pitch a game through on one of the sides. This is a game where if you had a Shohei Ohtani available to pitch, this would be a game for him to go 7 innings. Or a series going to go 7 innings one night. I think the bullpens are going to be tested. Because, again, these games have been blowouts. So the starter's been getting off the field early. So the bullpens are going to get stretched. Eventually, someone started going to have to put together a great game. And they're going to have to put together a long game to kind of relieve some of the pressure off these bullpens. If you're the Yankees And that's pretty much the NFCS. I don't think either series will be over by the time we guys talk again. And so, actually, let me double check that. I think both these series go at least six. So, that being the case, let me double check when game. So, game six for the Dodgers is Sunday, and game six for the Yankees is Monday. Okay, so the series will be over by the time we talk again. All right, so I think it'll be Dodgers, Yankees in the World Series, and Major League Baseball has a hard-on for the rest of life. What the Major League Baseball does not want is a Subway Series. They don't want Cleveland in either way. Small market, they will support, but if the Yankees are out, you lose half the country. It's just being honest. As a casual fan, you lose, not half, I mean not half, 40% of the country, no one cares if the Yankees are out. So, because of which, especially if it's Guardians and Mets, like, no one's going to care if it's Guardians and Mets. I might not even talk about it on the show if it's Guardians and Mets. You need at least the Dodgers in. You would love Dodgers-Yankees. Get East Coast, New York, West Coast Dodgers. Boom, seven-game series. It's in Yankee freaking stadium. Game seven, winner is the World Series champion. Like, that is the perfect thing for the Major League Baseball. Or it's in L.A., it's in Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. Winner gets the World Series, and it's Yankees-Dodgers. Like, and it's Judge, and it's Stanton, and it's Betts, and it's Shohei, and it's like, it's Garrett Cole in the Game 7, and, you know, it's just everything you would want in one of these locations, either in Yankee Stadium or in Dodger Stadium, either in L.A. or in New York. You don't want Guardians and Mets. Yes, it's New York, but the other one's Cleveland. It's not even New York's best team. And what Major League Baseball doesn't want is a Subway Series. Where it's Mets and Yankees, like that, like the perfect is Yankees Guardians. They'll settle for Dodgers Guardians. They'll hate a Subway Series, but they'll take it. It's, the whole thing's in New York. You don't get any traveling. The whole thing's in New York. And the worst case scenario is Mets Guardians. It's an Eastern. No one cares about it in the West. You know, it's Eastern. Like, it would feel very regional if it's Yankees. I mean, we one city. It'd be Yankees Mets. It's literally one city. It's regional if it's Guardians Mets. It's just it's what could have been if it's Dodgers Guardians. It's perfect if it's Yankees Dodgers. As far as from a marketing media production, like how we can push this East Coast, West Coast, like it's perfect if it's Yankees Dodgers. It's regional if it's Mets Guardians. It's just one city if it's Yankees Mets, and again it's just sad if it's Mets Guardians. But I do think the Dodgers ultimately do beat the Mets, which avoids the worst case scenario, and I think the Yankees beat the Guardians. And I was speaking to a Guardians fan. He was saying basically call them the inferior teams of the Yankees, and you know, and he also let me in on something too. We just got to get to the starting pitchers. The bullpen is not great in Cleveland. So if the Yankees can just get through the starting pitching ahead or tied, they're going to win every game because, again, the bullpen for the Guardians is not great. And we saw what the Yankees can uncurl from the bullpen. It's shut down city. So I think the MLB gets their wish. I think they get Yankees Dodgers in the World Series. And we'll talk about the World Series when we get there. But I think they do think they get Yankees Dodgers World Series, winner takes all. And in a scenario where the MLB cannot have hoped for better. But up next, we're going to have our college football two-minute drill, one of our growing segments. Shout out to my Swedish fans. They love this segment. Shout out to my fans in Germany as well. They also love this segment because they kind of get all their college football news in 2 minutes. How can you beat that? But our best for last, our two-minute college football drill is up next. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to do our increasingly growingly popular, honestly, one of my more increasingly favorite segments, the college football two-minute drill. Now we're going to get started. All right, so again, Simple rules. I'm going to get as much college football and news and stuff in 2 minutes. So the news, so the big thing in college football is they not have a two-minute warning. It's for the first time in college football history, they have a two-minute warning. Now, it's popularly called in college the two-minute timeout, as opposed to the two-minute warning in the NFL. It is popularly called the two-minute timeout in the college game. So we're going to execute a two-minute drill. Okay? All right, so 2 minutes on the clock. When the timer goes off, the segment stops. 3, 2, 1, go. Wait, hold on. Wait, I had some timering snafu. Production is killing me here. I'm going to get this restarted. 3, 2, 1. All right, Oregon defeats Ohio State in a battle of 2-3. You had this game go down in Austin. It was like Big Ten after dark. It was pretty dope to see. Oregon was hyped up all day. The crowd was going crazy when college game day was there. It was insane. One of the main moments of this was when Dan Lanning, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, decided to purposely put 12 men on the field in order for Ohio State to get a quote-unquote free play, use time off the clock. They don't go anywhere. They don't go anywhere because you stop the play. And it boils down time where Howard ultimately slides a little too late, was not granted the timeout. Oregon wins. So huge, huge moment there. Army and Navy are ranked together for the first time since 1960. Army is 23 and Navy is 25, if I remember correctly. But they are both ranked in the AP poll for the first time since 1960. Penn State defeats a USC in the Coliseum. There was multiple time mismanagement situations by Lincoln Riley. They also cannot figure out how to guard the tight end from Penn State. He tied an FBS record with 17 catches. Alabama survives against South Carolina. Coaching in the SEC seems to be a little harder for Kalen DeBoer than many people thought it would be. I didn't, but I thought it'd be going about as well as it is right now. And, well, he's showing it. He had a big lead against Georgia. He blew it. He's just an athlete stepped up for him. He lost to Vanderbilt. He almost lost South Carolina. This ain't, you know, he hadn't played your Texas A&Ms and your LSUs yet. So battling the SEC is harder than he may have thought. Oklahoma gets absolutely thrashed by Texas in the Red River rivalry. We don't got to spend much time on that because Oklahoma didn't do much. LSU escapes Ole Miss in a game where LSU was their centennial celebration of Tiger Stadium, the 100-year anniversary. It was also homecoming. LSU led for 0 minutes and 0 seconds, and they win the game because of a Kyron Lacy touchdown in overtime. Colorado lose a 3-point game to Kansas State because somehow, some way, with their four best receivers down, Colorado still became an air show. And I don't get the Ash and Jenny topic, and he's probably going to win the Heisman now because Travis Hunter was hurt. All right, so that is your college football two-minute drill. We got the playoff before it started, so the ball is in the air. It definitely counts. All right, so that is all I have for you today. Shout out to all my fans all across the world, especially Sweden and Germany. You guys have been showing out lately, so we appreciate that. We thank you for that. Now, this is an instant release show, so you will hear it right after I finish editing. The editing will take me longer on this show, maybe a couple of minutes. With us and IMS, we get down to business really quickly. But that is all I have for you guys today. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. For the YouTube show, we'll definitely put that in the description. And also, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe, and to follow at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social media handles, or all your favorite social media. That is the Just in Time Sports social media handle for your breaking news coverage and updates. Now, as always, don't forget to, I hope you enjoyed yourself. Sorry, you might have set back and learned something. I hope you enjoyed yourself. This is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.